My name is Carrie Taylor, and I'm interviewing Stephen Nemeche today at the Melrose Rugby Center, and we are going to ask him about his experiences in Northwest Roanoke. Can you tell me about your childhood?
It's kind of broad. Well, I did grow up here in Roanoke. Here in Northwest Roanoke, I live in the same house that my parents moved into in 1962. It's about 8 blocks north of here. So I have a lot of memories about this neighborhood. That building over there, that store there, used to be an ice cream shop. I used to ride my bike down here and get ice cream. So it was a very active neighborhood. We had a lot of children about the same age on my block, which is Franwell Avenue. So we would play football in the street in the summer times, and then we'd play Monopoly in the basement and basketball in my backyard. We had a basketball court in the backyard. I played on a football team starting when I was 9 that practiced right up the street, about 2 blocks up the street where the school that's there now is called Roanoke Academy, which wasn't there at the time. There was a school called Monroe Junior High School. And there's this huge field that's still there, and we practice there. So what I'm saying is that it was a very active neighborhood. I've ridden my bike all over Roanoke, particularly this neighborhood, when I was a small kid.
Is the neighborhood still active?
It's not even close to where it was. But it's not just the neighborhood. This neighborhood, it's the whole culture has changed. Children aren't outside playing in the street like they used to be. So no, it's not. This neighborhood is totally different than it was when I was a kid and even as a young adult. How would I describe the difference? Oh, there's so many things. Number one, you don't see children outside playing in the street. And if you do, my guess is that somebody might complain about the fact that they're making so much noise. I mean, it's just a different culture. I don't know the percentage, but I think it's mostly renters here now rather than homeowners. So that aspect has changed, which means that, and this is my bias, but I think it's pretty accurate, is that I don't think renters invest as much in their community. They don't care as much. And I think that's reflected in what you see in terms of the upkeep of the houses. There's clearly more criminal activity. At least I'm more aware of it. Maybe it was there then, but I don't think so. My mother and father, but mostly my mother, was never worried if we went bike riding. You know, she wasn't worried that we were going to disappear. We literally rode our bikes. When I was 13 years old, I had a friend named Ricky, and we would literally, one summer, we tried to play basketball at every court we could find in the city of Roanoke. And it was just mom going bike riding. That's it. And you just can't do that now. Particularly if you're a younger child. I think I was 13 then, but I was bike riding when I was 9 or 10 years old. And I was a little guy. So it's just the whole sense of the environment is different. A classic example of that is the fact that we don't have a grocery store in this neighborhood. If you go over here to the CVS, which is about a block away, that used to be a Kroger, and then there was a Super X pharmacy. I don't even think Super X exists anymore. But that's where we did our grocery shopping. If we want to do grocery shopping, if I need to go out and buy some eggs real quick, I can't run down the street like I used to when I was a kid, when my mother would say, go ride your bike down the street and go get me some eggs and a pack of cigarettes. I can't do that now. I have to drive all the way over to Valley View or Towers or something. So the entire flavor of the neighborhood has changed in terms of the interconnectedness and the activity and the family orientation. All of that has changed.
Do you have any children? And if so, can you describe some of the experiences that they've had versus experiences you had growing up?
I have one child. She's probably about your age. She's actually probably older than you are. She's about to turn 27. In terms of her growing up, she was born in Ohio. And we moved back down here when she was six. First we moved to Martinsville. And then we moved over to the Raleigh Court neighborhood near Patrick Henry. And that's where she grew up. I would say that her childhood was considerably different from mine. Partially because of who she is. She just has a whole different set of interests. She's a musician. I'm not a musician. She was not into sports. I was very much into sports. And I have a twin brother and two older brothers. We were all close together in age, and we all played sports. And she was an only child. So I think her experience was more oriented toward the school, where mine was more oriented toward the neighborhood. I don't know. I was pretty active in the school, too. We went to a small private school, run a Catholic, right over here by the Civic Center. So I kind of lived a divided life. The neighborhood was an African-American world, and the school was a European-American world. And school was dominated by playing basketball and football, and I got involved in some elected positions too. Like I was treasurer of the class. So her life was considerably different. Clearly, there was more diversity amongst her friends than there was about mine. Roanoke is very segregated, and my lifestyle as a child really showed that. And it continues to be very segregated, but I think she had a broader spectrum in terms of the relationships she developed. But for the most part, I think those are the most obvious differences.
Can you explain that African-American world you were talking about when you were growing up?
Well, it's a black neighborhood. It wasn't that there weren't any white families there, but there were very few. I can come home from school on Friday, and if I stayed in the neighborhood the whole weekend, I wouldn't see a white person unless I was watching TV. On the other hand, if I was at school, I remember there was a time when we were going downtown from the school, from Roanoke Catholic, we were going downtown to some kind of event in downtown Roanoke. And we had to walk through the Gainesboro neighborhood. We were going to walk from the school to downtown. And I remember one of my classmates asking, they were afraid of walking through a black neighborhood. So they asked if they could walk with me. I was like, first of all, I told them, there's nothing to be scared of. And number two, if there was, that's nothing I can do for you. But it just shows the difference between how concentrated the neighborhoods were at that time. When I think about it now, the Melrose Rugby neighborhood forum, this neighborhood group is an all-black organization. I mean, there are no white members right now. There's some people who come by, and I think we're about to have somebody join. That's not a intentional thing on our part. It's just the makeup of the neighborhood. So it may be a little bit more diverse than it was, 45 years ago, but I don't think it's that different. So.
You mentioned that Roanoke is still segregated. Is it this part specifically or more areas that branch out?
Northwest is black and relatively poor. Southeast is white and relatively poor. Southwest is white and relatively rich. And Northeast is probably the smallest area and more industrial, but I think it's probably predominantly working class white. Okay. And I think if you ask any Roanoker that, who's been here for any appreciable amount of time, they pretty much give you the same description.
So have you noticed any differences between your neighborhood and some of those other neighborhoods? And can you describe them?
Differences? I mean, what I just described, number one, there are economic differences. There are racial differences. And Southeast and Northwest actually have a lot in common. I wish I had this. I met with a city council member yesterday and gave him a list of 12 concerns that I have for the neighborhood. And there are things like there's problems with crime, there's problems with drugs, there's dilapidated housing, there's transient populations. I don't think we have the issue with homelessness here that they do in Southeast. But that's because there's a homeless shelter, there's a program that feeds off of the homelessness, for lack of a better description. This is a food desert. I believe that is. No, I don't think Southeast is a food desert. Oops, sorry about that.
It's okay. His phone was ringing.
I will turn that off. This is a food desert. Okay, that's my client calling. She's just going to have to wait. There is...
You were talking about food deserts?
Yeah, this is a food desert. And I'm trying to remember those 12 things that I listed for the city council member. Actually, I may have it in my car. But those are the major issues. I think there's some employment issues. There's some transportation issues. And the biggest thing that concerns me about this area, and it's the same kind of thing exists in Southeast, and because it is a food desert, you have these little mini marts like these stores right here. And the proportion of healthy foods that they provide compared to the amount of alcohol and tobacco that they sell is a concern. It's a major concern. If you walk from the CVS right here down to 11th Street, there are 6 businesses, and their primary product is alcohol. And even if you just go... And I actually counted the steps one day and did a presentation at City Council expressing my concern. If you just go from CVS to 17th Street, which is a distance of 4 blocks. It's not even 4 blocks. Let me think. CVS is on 19th. It's just 2 blocks. There are 4 establishments that primarily sell alcohol. And so when I did that presentation, I think it was to the Board of Zoning Appeals, actually. The question I asked is if they were proud of the fact that they were concentrating this area with alcohol sales. And what were they trying to accomplish? And you don't see that anywhere else in Roanoke. Well, you might see it in Southeast. But so to get back to your question about what the neighborhoods have in common, it seems to me like the... poorer neighborhoods have issues with high alcohol sales, and it's just not healthy.
Right.
You know, my angle with that presentation with the Board of Zoning Appeals is you know if we really want to be proud of Roanoke, let's be proud of all of it. You know, and I was sarcastic and I said something like, "Welcome to the city of Roanoke. We poison the people." You know, because that's the message that's being put out, and it's literally less than a block from where we're sitting right now. So, then on the other hand, you have some neighborhoods that are very wealthy, Greater Dyerly. I mean, the houses there are incredible. Old Southwest is not necessarily the housing stock is not the same as Greater Darley, but it's these older houses that people have really fixed up and have taken pride in. Now, Old Southwest has some issues too. You know, they have some drugs and some prostitution and some of these little stores that sell high volumes of alcohol. But they also have people who are organized around those issues and more aware of those types of issues. There was a neighborhood leader who you may have heard about named Joel Reichert, who recently passed away, who she was very dynamic in starting Old Southwest as an organization and back in the 70s. And it continues to be strong. And then I think about Southwest over the part of Southwest that's near the hospital. There's a lot of money in that area too. And so the point is, if you look at the income levels of the people who live in the neighborhood, then you can see that there's some differences in terms of how planning is taking place. You wouldn't have a concentration of four businesses that sell so much alcohol within a two-block radius in the Southwest, the Carillion area of Southwest. It just wouldn't happen. So,
can you explain to me what it is about the alcohol selling that, like, really seems to bother you? Is it just the health thing, or does it go beyond that?
Well, it goes beyond that. What bothers me is I don't understand the rationale for that kind of planning. If you have that volume of alcohol in front of any group of people, there's going to be a higher volume of people who consume it. Plain and simple. And that, to me, is a problem. It suggests one of two things. It suggests either the planning is done without any forethought. Like, people just don't care. Just, you know, if you want to sell alcohol, sure, here's your license, here's your store, so on and so. Or it's done with some forethought. You know, that somebody would like for it to be that way. I hate to think that that would be true. But it raises that question of why. Why is this designed this way? That's what bothers me. You know, I know some of the city planners. I've known them for years, and I've even considered some of them to be friends of mine. And we can, even though we maintain friendships, every once in a while there's a clash. You know, right now there's this issue of, there's this rezoning that the city wants to do where they are, dividing units of property into 5,000 feet instead of 7,000. And it creates the opportunity to build more units. And the city wants to move forward on that. Well, the neighborhood's not interested in that because then you're going to have more congestion. And most people know. I personally have four cars. Okay? So, it's not uncommon for an adult or family to have multiple cars for a single household. So, if you're starting to put in more households and people are still having the same number of cars, where do you park all those cars? And so now we have issues with, and you may even notice coming up and down the street, where people just park on their front yard. And it just kills the grass and makes it muddy and it makes it look bad and property values drop and all that. So again, the point is, what is the forethought in the thinking? On the one hand, I can see you have more properties, you have more taxes, that's more money for the city. But what's the quality of life in the neighborhood? You know, so it's that type of thinking that we kind of go back and forth on. And sometimes they just don't seem to get it. And they're probably saying the same thing about us.
So the city planning that you mentioned, I looked at a document that talked about Williamson Road. What are your thoughts on the city planning of Williamson Road?
Williamson Road, the way I see it, is a business district. It's a strip of businesses, and then there are neighborhoods on the outside of those businesses. That's fine. In fact, I wouldn't have an issue with Orange Avenue becoming more like that, where there is this business community. The caveat for me is I'm trying to get the money to stay in the neighborhood. I don't know how or if that can happen, but I'm trying to get the money to stay in the neighborhood because that will address things like dilapidated housing or vacant lots or just how people take care of the beautification and curb appeal of the area. So I'm fine with Williamson Road. I don't spend a whole lot of time over there, though, so... I have some clients that live over that way. I actually have one client that lives on Williamson Road. So I don't have a real strong opinion of it, but I've had some bad experiences over there as a child. I remember, and this again illustrates how segregated Roanoke was. The same friend named Ricky that I played basketball with, we went bike riding and found ourselves over in that area. And I guess we were about 13, 14 years old. And didn't really know where we were. And this car full of guys call us the N-word and start chasing us.
What year is this?
This would have been, let's see, 74, 75. Okay. In fact, I posted a tribute to him. Ricky passed away when he was 22. And I posted a tribute to him a couple years back. And I told that story about when we were riding bikes and these I'm assuming these guys were in their 20s maybe. And they're old enough to drive. And they called us the N-word. And we got out of there as fast as we could. You know, we stuck. What I liked about it was we went cutting through the alleys and all that and where they couldn't drive their car. But what I liked about that story was Ricky and I stayed together. You know, he didn't go one way and I went another way. We stayed together and basically got out of that neighborhood. When you mention Williamson Road, that memory comes to mind for me automatically. But as far as how it's designed and the city planning, and I don't seem to have an issue with it. It seems like it's a thriving, there's an organization, Williamson Road Area Business Association, I believe is what it's called, RABA, that has been going strong for a long. They have good leadership. Wendy Jones is the president and has been for years. They have good leadership, but it seems like they're very organized about how they promote and maintain and their businesses. And I would love to see something like that. In fact, my meeting with the city council member yesterday was about replicating the business incubator in Vinton that was started about 2 years ago. I'm very good friends with the woman that runs that program, and I want to bring that to Northwest Roanoke to just kind of stimulate the economy and bring some creativity and bring some organization, you know, to this area. So we're looking at this property that this city council member just bought that's on 11th Street. 11th Street used to be a thriving kind of economic center for this neighborhood. And right now it's not impressive at all. I have two clients that live in an assisted living place two blocks from 11th Street. I'm over there all the time. I will be over there. I'm going to take one of my clients out this evening. And it's nothing for me to get approached by a woman who's trying to make some money. It's nothing. This happens right here sometimes. So that just kind of reflects what's happening in the neighborhood. So
So the way Grandin is set up, it has businesses, it has a movie theater, it has restaurants all in that area. Do you think that that's a better model for a community or something like Williamson is?
Clearly, I like Grandin better.
Okay. So if you had the choice, you would pick something like Grandin.
Yeah, because Grandin... Okay, so I'm also chair of the Roanoke City Democratic Committee, so I'm involved in local politics. And we just set up an office over in the CoLab on Grandin Road. And part of the reason that we wanted to be there, number one, we had a member who was generous enough to fund that office space for us. But we like that environment because you have the Grandin Theater, which is family-oriented, but also very progressive. You have Roanoke Natural Foods that is health-oriented. I used to be on their board. Health-oriented, family-oriented, progressive, conscientious. There's my other phone. It's that sense of community where people are coming together and organizing themselves around their values. I clearly prefer that than a business that's there just to make money. And the impression that I get, and again, I'm 1,000 times removed from Williamson Road, but they are businesses for the sake of business. And the businesses you describe over on Grandin are businesses that are there because of people and values and community. Totally different concept.
What are some of the values in this area and some of the people and concepts?
You know, I don't think... Here's the thing. I mentioned, you know, that I'm a chair of the Democratic Committee. Here's what people aren't paying attention to is... There's Republicans and Democrats aren't as different as everybody thinks. Young people and old people aren't as indifferent as everybody thinks. Black people and white people aren't as different as everybody thinks. Yeah, there are cultural nuances, you know. I'm not real excited about St. Patrick's Day. It does nothing for me culturally. But when I've led Kwanzaa celebrations for the city, I see white people get excited because they appreciate what Kwanzaa is about. So my point is that the values we hold as human beings aren't that different. So what's valued on Williamson Road and what's valued in on Grandin Road and what's valued here, all the same stuff. People want their children to be healthy and happy. People want to be able to work jobs that they enjoy and also meet their needs. You know, people want, this is going to sound political, but people want health care, you know. When you get to be, I'm 56, when you get to be my age, you begin to look at life a little bit differently. You look at retiring and you look at, you know, how long am I going to be here till I'm 80, 90, 100? You know, what is it? Everybody, as they approach those years, they look at it the same way. They want health care. They want to be able to retire comfortably. It's not that the values are different. It's about how we get there. This is what we disagree on. I just had a conversation with my daughter and her fiancé about their relationship. And, you know, they hit a couple of bumps in the road. And I basically explained to them that relationships are about agreeing on how. How are we, what are our values? And how do we express those? How do we live those out? How do we relate to each other? What are the things that we're doing to promote those values? So the values are the same. It's people value spirituality, especially here in the South. You know, religion is a big deal. And people take a different approach to it, but people value their health. People value their family. People want security and safety. It's all the same stuff. It's just about how you move forward in making it happen.
What is currently under development in Northwest to change the area?
Okay. Wow. Okay, right now, this is a target area for community development block grants, so we call CDBG funds. the Housing Authority has applied for this multi-million dollar grant a couple of times and has been denied a couple of times. And the idea is to address the condition of the housing and to promote health care. And there are a number of organizations. There's a United Way, Healthy Roanoke Valley, neighborhood groups like this one. There's an Invest Health initiative that's trying to bring a grocery store here, possibly a co-op. I'd like to see a co-op. So there are clearly some discussions and plans in their infancy, I would say in their infancy, to address some of the issues that we've already discussed. The question, once again, is how do you make that happen? How do you involve the people who already live here? Which is, I was glad that the city council member was willing to meet with me. One of the things he asked me is, where do you live? And I said, I live right here in the neighborhood, about 6-8 blocks that way. And then he talked about two other leaders who, I believe both of them live in this neighborhood. I'm not exactly sure where they live. But his angle was, I want to involve the people in the neighborhood. I think there's clear recognition that there are things like the fact that it's a food desert and we need access to healthy food and a reduction of alcohol and tobacco sales. I think people recognize that. And there's some work in place. In fact, there have been a couple of surveys that have been put out, and there's one we're getting ready to put out as well, to try and collect that data about how people feel about living here, so that things can be addressed programmatically. But it just hasn't gotten to the point where, I'll give you another example real quick. There's a nightclub about 5 or 6 blocks this way that has had issues with opening and closing because people were in there doing illegal activities, you know, selling drugs or alcohol or whatever. Okay, well, Second Harvest Food Bank has taken over that building, and they want to put a community kitchen in there where they teach people cooking skills, which I think is incredible. It's just another example of something real concrete that's happening on a broader institutional level to address a specific problem in this neighborhood. But what I was about to say is, it just hasn't gotten to the point where these programs are really in place and start and having an effect. It's just a lot of, there's some plans and some talking and that type of thing, but we just haven't gotten to that place. And I think what I'm curious to see is, obviously there's going to be some disagreement as ideas come forward. I'm curious to see how that gets negotiated, and I want to be involved in those discussions or helping to facilitate some of those or work through some of those conflicts.
So you mentioned when you were growing up, the store right here was an ice cream store.
Yeah, hi.
There was a Kroger, mm-hmm. and there was a pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think was a reason that these businesses just seemed to be pushed out? And
I can tell you why. At least I can tell you what I've heard about why Kroger left. What I heard was, and I think I witnessed some of this too, is that there were more disturbances around the store. I remember coming down here and just looking at the parking lot and just seeing that there was trash and broken glass and stuff like that. So there was, and I can't tell you what the source of it was. I was too young, and, you know, I was caught from age 14 to, you know, I left Roanoke when I was 19. I went to a Virginia Western Community College for my first year of college. But from age 14 to 19, I wasn't caught up in what was happening in the neighborhood. I was caught up in playing football and basketball. So I wasn't paying attention to all those things. But what I heard was that there was so much disruption in the neighborhood that the store, I don't know if they had some financial problems and felt like they needed to move or what. I don't think it was the city planning thing. And I'm trying to remember if the store sat, I think it sat empty for a while, just the building was there. And then they eventually came along and I think just paved over the area, just crushed the building and just was just a vacant lot. Then CVS came, I can't tell you what year. This may have happened while I went to college and then I went and worked at Ohio State for a while. And then when I came back, everything was different. There was a CVS there, and then they built the fire station. So I don't know exactly why. But what concerns me, again, it goes back to the planning, is someone should have been paying attention to talking about and addressing the fact that all of a sudden there is no grocery stores there anymore.
How does the community feel about that?
Well,
it must be very frustrating having to travel long distances to go to the grocery store.
I can't say that I've had concrete conversations with people about how they feel. I can talk about how I feel as a current member and as someone who grew up here. And it's my feelings I have two things when I think about my feelings. Number one is, how healthy can we be under those circumstances? Particularly if there are other related issues, like people don't have cars or so they don't really, they're forced to have to grocery shop at this store right here and feed their family from this store right here. That's the first thing, is that really bothers me. And then the second thing is, goes back to what I said a minute ago, is you I see the city of Roanoke, I love the city of Roanoke, and I love the people on city council and the administration, so I'm not talking bad about anybody, but I'm looking at things like we rebuilt the library downtown. Raleigh Court got a new library. Williamson Road is in the midst of building a new library. You're talking about the rebuilding the library here at Melrose. Vinton got a brand new library. wonderful. I mean, I spend a lot of time in the library. I love it, you know. But couldn't that same energy be put into building, doing something to address housing or the fact that we don't have a grocery store in a given area? So the energy, my feeling goes back to where are we putting our energy? What are our priorities? You know, I mean, libraries are important. But I think food is more important than the library. If I had the choice between a store and a library, a grocery store and a library, I would choose the grocery store.
What do you know about the history of the neighborhood you live in? And since you're president of the Neighborhood Forum, also about the history around this area that we're in?
Okay. Well, they're the same. Where I live in this area are the same neighborhood. I know that... Okay, the city council member I met with yesterday is named John Garland. John and I have a good relationship. we kind of laugh at each other because I'm chair of the Democratic Committee, and he beat out one of our candidates. And so we joked about that a little bit. He barely won. He also jokes about being Republican. But we still have a good relationship. And yesterday he talked about the fact that he grew up in this neighborhood. He actually grew up in the Williamson Road area. So he knew this area very well, and he wants to try and bring it back. But he described, John's a little bit older than me, he described the neighborhood as being all white. And he said it changed because, and this isn't just him talking, I think it's a pretty much well-documented fact. It changed because what he described as white flight, which isn't a term he coined, it's a common description. So this neighborhood used to be all white. The house I live in was built in 1941. And I assume that the people who built it and the first family that lived in it was white. And we bought it from another black family. So I assume that, and I could probably go back through the records, that somewhere in the 50s, the neighborhood began to change. And I think the story of the house where I live is probably pretty typical to what's happened throughout the neighborhood. Because now, clearly, it's not predominantly white. And then I understand that the city literally moved some black families from the area of the city where the Civic Center sits now. That whole area used to be predominantly black or all black. And now it's the Civic Center and these other businesses, the post office and all that. And so those families were relocated. Some of them came to this neighborhood. Some of them went to other areas of the city. So I know that kind of history. I don't know. I haven't done any reading or hard research. It's just something you just kind of know, you hear about. I know that some of the older African-American people who are still here kind of still angry about that. So I know that kind of stuff. I know that Roanoke has a history of violent racism, where there were lynchings and things like that. So,
are there elements of that racism still around?
Of that kind of bigotry and hatred?
Not as violent, because yeah. People can't lynch anymore, but some lasting elements.
Well, I think I think racism is kind of like a chameleon. I mean, it's still here. It's just changed form. Just recently, I was I went to a funeral in Southwest Roanoke. And on my way out of Roanoke, somebody drives by and sticks a Confederate flag out of their window. So, I mean, racism isn't gone. So, you know, when you say elements of racism, yeah, sure it is. It's just not as overt. And when I go back to the designs and the systems and the fact that we have four businesses that sell high alcohol sales in a neighborhood. This isn't Wimpson Road out there. It's in a neighborhood. So, these four businesses are literally surrounded by people's houses. I mean, there's a couple of churches too. That to me is institutional racism. And it's not that anybody sat down and said, okay, how can I create alcoholism in the Northwest Roanoke? I don't think anybody sat down and took out a pen and mapped out this strategy. It's just a lack of valuing people that leads to a lack of forethought, that leads to that type of planning. Or that actually, it's probably more accurate to say it's a lack of planning. Because the city planners that I know, if they really thought about it and looked at how the pieces of the puzzle were kind of falling into place, they would say, whoa, hold on a second. We don't want that in Northwest Roanoke. When you have a prejudice or a bias, it comes out in everything you do. When you, because you don't have the ability to plan anything else. You know, okay, I'll go back to politics for a minute. Let's talk about women's rights and women's reproductive rights. And you talk about a government that's dominated by men. Okay? Can they effectively plan health care for women? No. They can't do it. You know, if let's go back to the questions that you're asking me today. If we want to fix this community. Who are the best people to be at the table to plan that? It's people who live in the community. You're not going to go to Richmond and put together a committee of people and say, hey, let's fix Northwest Roanoke, because they don't have the perspective. So you gotta have the people who best know the issue or the problem to be involved in the solution. So when I talk about institutional racism, I'm not pointing fingers at somebody and saying, what's wrong with you? I'm saying, do you recognize what your prejudice and your bias is? And have you taken steps to counteract that so that when you develop a plan, it doesn't carry your bias? Okay? So.
What does the word Oaklands mean to you?
What is it?
The word Oaklands.
Oaklands? Mm-hmm. Like Oakland, California? Oakland?
It's the right word, but not California.
Okay. Nothing at all. I don't know that word, that term.
Okay. Well, Oaklands was a plantation that was slave-owning, and it was right near Rockland Avenue. And it used to be owned by the Watts family. What kind of feelings do you get that there was a slave-owning plantation in the area?
Oh, it gives me the creeps. I'm a trainer. And all this stuff right here on the table is my team-building stuff. And I went to a training, and I did a training in South Boston, which is kind of close to, kind of like halfway between, it's kind of close to the Danville. And it was on a plantation. And they talked about the fact that there were 300 enslaved Africans that lived there. And I swear, that night, I spent the night there. I swear that night, I could hear voices. I don't know that it was literal or not, but it really gave me the creeps. And so my gut feeling is how creepy that is, that people actually owned other people and regarded them as property. I mean, that just blows my mind. I remember when I first heard about the KKK, I was like, that can't be. It can't really be an organization that just hates people because of their skin color. It just can't be. And then when I found out it was real, it was the same kind of feeling. Like, really? I mean, my reaction to that is, it goes back to that question of how did this kind of mentality come to be? And just really, really being amazed by the impact of that kind of thinking, that for centuries, entire generations of people never had a earned a wage or owned property or were subject to any form of humiliation or violence. I mean, that just blows my mind. When you say Oaklands, what that does is just, and you tell me about that history, it just kind of brings it a little closer to home and makes it more concrete. But it's not a new concept, you know.
And then the last question I'm going to ask you, well, I have two more questions.
Okay.
What do you feel you have contributed to the area that you live in, since you're very active in this community?
Not as much as I would have liked. I mean, I put in a lot of time. But I'm not sure that I've seen the impact that I'd like to see. What a few people have said to me recently is, be patient. You know, you plant your seeds and you don't see the results right away. So I think what's ahead is more than what's already happened. I've been president of this organization for 4 years. I've been chair of the Roanoke City Democratic Committee for less than 2 years, actually. That's really not a long time. So To answer your question more specifically, what have I contributed? I'm keeping the conversation going. I am developing relationships with the right people who can hear the message that needs to be heard on behalf of so many people who either don't realize there's a problem, don't care that there's a problem, or don't believe the problem can be solved. Because the bulk of the people, not only in this neighborhood, but in neighborhoods throughout the United States, are so caught up in, okay, I work my job, and I take care of my family, and I go to sleep. And they get an inkling of what's happening on the political scene, more so now than in previous years. But they even don't know what to do about that. People, you know, I'm also an election official. And the reason I'm an election official is because I want to be sure the polling places are run well. And most people don't know how to, there are people who don't know how to register to vote or don't know how to ensure that they're properly registered. And then if they do go vote, they don't know much about the candidates. People have no idea that politics is always taking place. I didn't know. I was involved with the Democratic Committee before. They approached me and said, hey, I understand you have some pretty good, this is basically what they said, you have some pretty good leadership skills, will you come lead us? That's basically what it said, what they said. And I said, well, I've never been involved with politics before, but I'll do it. And I've clearly made some mistakes, because you do when you take on something new. But the point, I'm using myself as an example of somebody who was active in the community and thought I was doing the things that I needed to be doing, and came to realize there's this whole other set of things I need to be doing that I wasn't even aware of, you know. And so the average person is, I put it this way. There's this expression that I heard once and I continue to use. There are those who don't know and don't know they don't know. There are those who don't know and know they don't know. There are those who know but don't know that they know. And there are those who know and know that they know. And when you transcribe it, you'll appreciate it more. But there's just this lack of awareness that the average citizen has.
And the last question I have for you is, what is something only an insider to this neighborhood would know? Or if you want to interpret that a different way, what do you want outsiders to know that they don't know?
I want people to know that it's really not that bad a place to live. You know, it's not the prettiest neighborhood. It clearly has some issues. But it also has a lot of potential. And it's home. You know, I hear people talk about Northwest Roanoke like they're scared to come over here. Like they might get shot or there might be a drug deal or something. I will go anywhere, any time of day, with no concern. People talk about gangs. Okay, well, I haven't seen a gang. You know, there's some people. There's a house up the street, I know, right up the street from me, that is involved in some drug dealing. I know because the police have told me, and I think it's a reliable. I have a pretty good relationship with police officers. But I don't think it's gang related, and I'm not afraid that my house is going to get shot up. There was a time about 4 or 5 months ago, I'm laying in bed, I've heard gunshots, but that's not a daily thing, you know. So, what would I want people to know? I just want people to know that, it really is not a bad place to live. I think that's my message.
All right. Well, thank you so much for interviewing with me, and this is going to be the close of our interview.
Okay, great.